No one with a decent respect for bad taste will want to miss Paul Bartel's new movie, wrote film critic Stuart Kluwans. Bartel co-writes, directs, and stars in his comedies. His 1982 comedy of bad taste, Eating Raoul, became a cult classic. Bartel got his start in Hollywood making action films for the king of B-movies, Roger Corman. He directed Cannonball and Death Race 2000, a futuristic thriller about a car race in which drivers get extra points for running down pedestrians. Bartel's new film is a sex farce called Scenes from the Class Struggle in Beverly Hills. It takes place over a weekend at the lavish Beverly Hills mansion of a washed-up TV actress trying for a comeback, played by Jacqueline Bisset. The cast of characters include a quack doctor, a pretentious playwright, a social-climbing gold digger, two ethnic servants, and a neglected housewife. I asked Bartel if the film is about people he knew.
It's about people that I know, people that I've read about, and people that I'd like to know.
I feel like this demands an explanation.
All of the incidents in the script are either things that Bruce Wagner, my writer friend and collaborator, and I have actually witnessed or have read about or have been told about confidentially by reliable sources.
Well, there are certain character types that you parody in the movie. Let's look at your role, for instance. You play Dr. Mo Van de Kamp, a thinologist. Is this a type you know from real life or from TV talk shows? Tell us about the character.
Well, the doctor is a quack, and God knows Beverly Hills has plenty of them. Actually, my role was originally supposed to be the dog's psychiatrist, but Paul Mazursky used that joke in Down and Out in Beverly Hills, so we had to revise our script. And Bruce, I think taking cruel advantage of my problems in keeping my weight down, decided to write me as a thinologist, and I went along with the joke.
Everyone, this is Kelly. She did a piece on me for Lifestyle magazine.
Oh, I adore Lifestyle.
Oh, good. Do tell me about the article. Is it going to be whatever happened to Hillary?
Mm-hmm. What are all these black flecks everywhere?
They're ashes from the fire.
There's supposedly 17 separate fires going.
17?
Spread over two or three counties.
The winds are fanning it.
No wonder I couldn't sleep.
The winds breed depression. I recommend junk food until you're ready to vomit. Then a bracing saltwater enema.
The tastelessness in your movies is rude but not revolting, if you know what I mean. It never gets like terribly explicit or graphic. Can you talk about the kinds of tastelessness that interest you most?
Well, I would never refer to the things that I do as tasteless. I think taste is a spectrum. And actually what I try to accomplish is a kind of contradiction. I try to take subject matter that is likely to offend or upset people in the abstract and treat it as tactfully and as discreetly as possible so that they are induced to laugh at it at the same time that they're gasping.
What are the things that you really have to work at getting right in terms of tone and timing to achieve that effect?
Well, of course, the principal thing in a motion picture is the visual image. And even while people are preparing to do shocking things, I try to keep the image as discreet as possible so that in the scene, for instance, towards the end of the film, where the two servants are finally consummating their bet, and one of them is about to have sexual congress with the other. I carry on the shot of the back rub, which terminates in the withdrawal of the underpants, right up to the point where I think the audience is going to think, oh my God, he's not really going to make us watch this, is he? And then I cut away.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your movies, usually play people who are refined and inhibited on the surface, but kind of perverse underneath. And I was wondering if you see an element of that in yourself, or what it is in yourself or in your acting that leads you to write characters like that for you to play.
I find it very unproductive to be too analytical about my own persona and the parts that I play. I follow my instincts. If it makes me laugh when I see it on the screen, then I'm satisfied.
I'm going to persist, though, and ask you if you think of yourself as looking different from what you're really like.
Well, nobody... No, I shouldn't say nobody, but most people, have a different concept of themselves than other people have of them. But I can certainly tell you that the character of Mo Van de Kamp is very different from the way I am in real life. I certainly don't speak in the kind of aphorisms that he does, and I'm not nearly as pompous as he is. And I hope that I'm not a charlatan, which he certainly is.
You left out one thing. Are you a lecher?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not a lecher. And that certainly is one of his primary characteristics.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, you got your start in movies, or at least one of the things that helped you get started in movies was working for Roger Corman. Now, for him, you directed exploitation movies, action movies. Now, does that fit in with your image of yourself at all?
No. In fact, the element that I contributed to the most successful of the films that I made for Roger, which was Death Race 2000, was black humor. I'm afraid that that the action in that film, while there were some nice action sequences, was not really... That was all there in the script and in the storyboard, and all I had to do was execute it. So I didn't feel that I could take much, or I don't feel that I can take much credit for that. But it was some of the jokes and some of the comic notions in the film. I think some of the jokes may have gone over Roger Corman's head, and I think he resented a certain amount of the humor that went into it. He kept vacillating between the feeling that he wanted a hard action film and wanting a sophisticated comedy, and he would go back and forth. And I knew what I wanted, and I just stuck to my guns and put as much comedy into it as possible. In my cut of the film, there was no blood at all. He added a lot of crushed heads and splattering blood.
Did you give yourself any cameos in the movies you directed for Corman?
In my very first feature film, which was done for Roger's brother, Gene Corman, I played a silent cameo of a bum that stumbles out from behind a tree in the park. It was about a 5-second appearance, I would say. Mm-hmm. In my second feature, which was Death Race 2000, I gave myself about 5 lines. I played the surgeon who wheels David Carradine in on a gurney, just having been put back together and announced to the press that he was ready to race again.
So you never graduated from the Corman Studios to become a big action film director yourself. Instead, you went a completely different route. You ended up writing, producing, and directing your own movies. How did you end up taking that direction?
After Cannonball was released, I went through a period of 5 years where I worked on projects that never quite made it to the screen. I did appear in a number of films as an actor that did make it to the screen. But during this 5-year period, I was hired to write scripts, to supervise other people writing scripts, which I was supposed eventually to direct. And none of them were fully financed or could be cast to the satisfaction of the studio. All of them fell apart for one reason or another. And towards the end of the 5 years, I really started getting desperate. I knew I wanted to make a film that was very personal, but I also wanted to make something that was commercial, and I thought that if I could come up with a funny idea that was based on the elements of sex and violence, which were the two cornerstones of the Corman empire, that I could probably get Roger to back the project. So together with my friend Dick Blackburn, I hatched the idea for Eating Raoul. At first, we had discussed writing a film in which Mary and I would play detectives. And then we decided that that was probably a cliched idea that had already been overexposed on television. And instead of detectives, we went to the opposite extreme and made ourselves murderers.
So the premise of the story was that you and Mary Warrenoff play a put-upon middle-class couple who decide to lure swingers to your apartment through ads in the sex magazines, and then you rob and kill them.
Right. And in order to get the money for our little country kitchen.
Right.
The idea in a single line is that we play a couple that are so upset with the with Los Angeles, with that in order to get away from the violence and sexuality of life in Los Angeles, we become we embark on a career of sex murders.
Right. In order to get away from all the filth.
Right.
Do you realize that we have made almost $1,000 in 2 days, tax-free?
Just by killing people.
Horrible sex-crazed maniacs that nobody in the world would miss. I wonder how much we could make if we really put our minds to it.
What do you mean?
The city is full of rich perverts. If somehow we could get them to come to the apartment...
But Barry, why would they? We'd have to lure them with...
sex.
But you wouldn't really have to, I mean, you wouldn't actually do anything.
Of course not. The minute they try anything dirty, you pop them in the head and get rid of them like you did with this guy.
Mary, how would we contact them? We don't know anything about this swinger business.
Ask someone who does.
All of them read this?
Isn't there something a little more classier?
Nope, this paper covers the field from the richest to the poorest. If they're kinky, they read the Hollywood Press.
This scenario provides great opportunities for showing the absurdity, for mocking S&M costumes and S&M theater. I think you have a really good time with that.
Yes, all of the little sex fetishes that people seem to become so attached to in this town, the Nazi fetish, the leather and chain fetish, the... and even some that we invented, the little boy fetish, the we took a very sort of cloddish middle class approach to all these fetishes, and somehow the synthesis of that that point of view for our characters and the sophistication of what they were trying to do resulted in laughs.
When you were writing or directing this movie, did you go to any sex clubs or sex shops to get in the spirit for the movie?
Well, we went to some sex stores, and we looked at some sex papers because there was a whole plot element that involved putting running an ad in one of the Los Angeles sex papers. Unfortunately, our budget was so low, we didn't have enough money to be able to afford to print prop paper. So we went to one of the real sex papers and we offered to mention their name several times in the film, and in exchange we asked them to run our ad 1 week in their paper. And we got some very curious answers to our ads, mostly from German people.
What kind of responses?
There was one fellow who wanted very much to meet Cruel Carla and felt that he might actually have met her once before. He thought he recognized her from the paper, and he hoped that if indeed she was the woman that he'd met in the past, that she would remember his specialty and still be willing to engage in it.
You and your wife star in your movies.
Well, she's not my wife.
She's not your wife?
No,
she's just
a good friend.
Oh.
She's only my wife in the movies.
Gosh, I really thought you were married.
No.
That means you're not lovers either?
No, I'm gay, and she's a painter.
Gosh, that's really funny. I thought you were a couple.
Well, we are a couple, but
a different
we're
kind
not
of couple.
That kind
right.
of a couple.
So I won't ask you about what it's like to direct her having affairs with Robert Beltran in movies.
No, you should ask me if I'd had an affair with Robert Beltran.
That's right. Well, did you?
Well, I wish I could say I had, but I haven't. He's wonderful, though. I wish I could make him a star. I wish that this movie would catapult him up there to the place where the studios would take a serious interest in him. He and Arneesha Walker are the two people that I really, mm-hmm. above all else, wish that this film would help.
Well, you have such a great cast in the new movie. You've got the people you just mentioned. You have Wallace Shawn. Paul Mazursky has a cameo. Ed Begley Jr.'s in it. is Jacqueline Bisset, yourself, Mary Warrenoff. Ray Sharkey. It's a terrific group of people. I was wondering, are they mostly friends of yours? Or these are really interesting actors who don't always get great parts in movies.
They are. Ray Sharkey I had known slightly over the years, but never become a close friend of. Wally Shawn I was a fairly good friend of, and I actually didn't want him in the movie. I didn't think he was right for the part. But when Wally read, and he read not only the part that he played, the gynecologist, but he also read the playwright, he was so funny and so unexpected and so original and interesting that the question became not should we cast him, but which role should we give him. We finally decided it was a cheap shot to cast him as the playwright. So he played the gynecologist, and I think he's one of the main pillars of the movie.
Mm-hmm. I have never been able to figure out how you can direct yourself in a movie. I mean, how a director can also star in the film. You managed to do that. Well, can you give me a sense of what the tricks are to making that work?
It's the same way that Dumbo is able to fly. If you believe you can do it, you can.
All right, I'll accept that as a highly analytical answer.
Well, as I was saying before, you know, I was telling you that I started out doing a silent bit in my first picture, and then I did five lines in my second, and I built up. Each picture I've given myself a larger role until, in Eating Raoul, I thought, what the hell? I'm risking my own money. This is all being done by me and my friends. Why shouldn't Mary and I play the leads? And we did, and it worked out.
As an independent director and actor and writer, I think you've stayed so far, in a way, on the periphery of the commercial film industry, as opposed to right in the middle, right in the mainstream of it. Is it your intention to stay there, or are you trying to work your way into the center?
I have nothing against the commercial film industry, and I have often been involved with commercial, you know, big studio films as an actor. And a lot of my friends have directed them, and I would be happy to direct a film for a big studio. I did, in fact, direct a film for Orion a couple of years back, a Tim Conway comedy called The Long Shot. But about 10 years ago, I sort of had a talk with myself and decided that rather than try to become a commercial director, one of the directors that studios hire to do the big commercial projects that they develop, that I would much prefer being an independent producer, director, with my own, you know, sort of specialized style, somewhat limited audience, but more intense identity. I would prefer to be an artist, to whatever degree I have the right to claim that identity, than a maker of commercial products.